discussion, some of the discussion we've had today, and most of the debate around health and security, surrounds how conflict affects health. I think the links there are, have a ways to go in terms of needing to be further explored, and as Court mentioned, developing better data. But I'd like to talk about the other side of the coin, which is essentially how poor health may be linked to security and conflict, and actually be considered a threat to national security. Now, while this does not have the epidemiological importance in terms of causing disease, morbidity, and mortality that warfare does, it does have an extremely outsized political importance. And interestingly enough, that outsized political importance, because of the link to national security, because of the political priority of national security, actually gives you the ability to create programs in global health that can affect the epidemiology. So that's the large political importance, I think, is a critical piece of this. It should be clear that the links between the history of disease affecting security are actually quite old. This is not a new field. Diseases have been intimately tied to state interests since states were created. The quarantines in Europe, EU sanitary conventions in the 1800s, even the French and U.S. efforts to build the Panama Canal, which failed and succeeded respectively because of efforts to control malaria and yellow fever, were very closely tied to state interests. The two schools, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, created partially to protect, in the London case, protect colonial workers in the colonies and to push forth U.S. power in the Panama Canal, control those diseases, and therefore build the canal. Interestingly, around the 1950s, maybe a little bit before, global health and the state interests sort of went their separate ways. With the advent of antibiotics, decolonization, state interests in global health problems and how it affected their interests declined. At the same time, I think that's where you saw this rise of global health as a humanitarian endeavor, something I think that's basically fully embraced now at APHA and in the global health community. In the 90s, global health and state interests began to come back together. You saw concerns with bioterrorism, new emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases, the rise of HIV, as well as the threat of bioterrorism, which had been sort of brought back up into the political debate because of a number of Soviet defectors who revealed that when the Soviet Union signed the Biological Weapons Convention, they actually ramped up production of their biological weapons, which obviously caused great consternation. So while global health and national security interests have come back together again, the national security perspective on infectious diseases is quite different from the global health perspective. It is not the humanitarian consequences of infectious diseases that worries the national security community. It is the strategic impact on state interests that concerns the national security community. Let me take you through an example related to HIV, and I think HIV is an interesting example to look at because it's neither as clear-cut as bioterrorism, which sort of fits into the general rubric of national security. It's a threat. Bioterrorism is very easily dealt with by the national security community. HIV, on the other hand, is a major global health problem that has some security impacts, but also huge humanitarian consequences. So I think it's a very interesting case to sort of look at what the strategic impacts of some of these diseases are. Now, while I said I only had one slide, I was unable to load my new file, so I'll have to take you through to this one, which is the one I intended to use. Only one still. And I'm on my final I'm on my final slide now. So let's talk briefly. Let me take you through. This says, sorry, you can't see the top of it. Pathways for HIV/AIDS impact on national security. And this is, again, the link between state interests and strategic interests. So HIV prevalence among, we have first, strategically important people, right? Those are soldiers and peacekeepers. The links between HIV and soldiers are quite strong. There's evidence in this field is somewhat unclear. It's a big problem because states classify data on HIV among their military populations. However, I think you can say a number of publications have confirmed that AIDS is now the leading cause of death in many militaries and police forces in sub-Saharan African countries. The loss of, interestingly, it's not only a problem in Africa, though. Russia has turned out at least 5,000 potential military recruits from service in the last 2 years alone because of HIV infection. So that's compounding Russia's difficulties finding new military recruits because of their health crisis. The links between HIV and armed forces also played a very strong role in the early history of the HIV-AIDS epidemic. In 1986, President Museveni of Uganda sent 60 of his generals to Cuba for further military training. Castro, who had had troops in Angola in the 70s, had experience with HIV, and they protested the Ugandan troops, and 18 of the 60 turned out to be HIV positive. This is in 1986. So at a meeting of the non-aligned non-aligned countries in Zimbabwe in 86, Castro approached Museveni and said, "Brother, you've got a problem here." And a month later, that was really the genesis of Uganda's action on AIDS. A month later, the Ugandan AIDS Commission was established, and serious political leadership by Museveni began on addressing HIV/AIDS. Similarly, in Thailand, the data on HIV among armed forces in northern Thailand, you saw 1991, I believe, up to 6% of very young 21-year-old military recruits becoming HIV positive. And that and the idea that HIV could impede the economic growth of the kingdom really led Thailand to embrace efforts against HIV, call them a direct threat to their national security, and begin serious efforts like the 100% condom campaign to address the pandemic in the kingdom. The worry here with soldiers is, of course, loss of trained soldiers, which is quite expensive for militaries to replace soldiers trained up on complex weapon systems, soldiers with combat experience, very difficult to replace, and interrupts the training of younger soldiers as well. And the broader worry is, of course, you'll have decreased military effectiveness. The next strategically important population are those of peacekeepers, and it's the link with peacekeepers that brought HIV to the United Nations Security Council in 2000, which is when this field generally received a lot more attention. United Nations Security Council meetings were resisted from the start. No one in the United Nations Security Council wanted to talk about HIV, just as an important issue. The peacekeepers were actually brought on by Ambassador Holbrooke as a way to link the issue of HIV/AIDS to the mandate of the United Nations Security Council. The Security Council authorizes all peacekeeping missions and therefore has authority over the peacekeepers. So that was the peacekeepers, while it's sort of presented specifically that United Nations Security Council meeting on HIV sort of presented as an example of how the security community embraced the threat HIV/AIDS poses to the world. The reality was quite different. The reality was it was opposed from the beginning, and they had to fight tooth and nail to get it addressed there. And it was only with the link with the peacekeepers that really forced HIV into the Security Council. Now, the concern with HIV is broad. Peacekeepers both spread HIV, particularly in Cambodia, and are infected with HIV. I think more Indonesian peacekeepers died of HIV than combat during the Cambodia mission. Concern is also that you will no longer be able to staff peacekeeping missions. Many countries, especially the United States, has really an allergy to supplying peacekeeping troops and really would rather African troops respond to African peacekeeping missions. And there's a big worry that South Africa and Nigeria, because of HIV, may have trouble contributing enough troops to these missions. There's also a high politicization of this because there's such poor data on HIV among peacekeeping forces that a number of countries have used the issue of HIV to try and keep out foreign peacekeepers, most recently Sudan, arguing that the peacekeepers pose a risk to their HIV/AIDS programs because of their presence. The reality is, of course, Sudan doesn't want the peacekeepers there, but it's highly politicized. We also have HIV prevalence among countries, and these countries, the national security perspective on this differs as to whether or not you're talking about a highly affected region that doesn't have a lot of strategic importance, like sub-Saharan Africa or the Caribbean, and a strategically important state, such as Russia, India, China. Again, it's really important to recognize that national security does differentiate. They're not talking about where the disease is worst. They're talking about where the disease is worst and how it affects state interests. This particular division is generally related to U.S. state interests. So the worry in highly affected regions that don't have a huge amount of strategic importance is that you have food insecurity. There's been a lot of debate about orphans, AIDS orphans, and whether or not what kind of upbringing they'll have. The data in the public health community generally shows that AIDS orphans are doing okay. They're certainly not doing as well as other children who haven't lost their parents to the disease. But there's no evidence of increased criminality at this point. Whereas the national security data looks forward and says, what will these children be like in the future? You see these really alarmist reports coming out about AIDS orphans and child soldiers, AIDS orphans destabilizing the country through a wave of criminality. And it's really interesting to look at that particular issue because public health looks data looks back retrospectively. And national security community, while it looks at that, looks forward as to what the future threats are going to be. It's an interesting division between these two communities that causes a lot of problems. You also have worries about state stability in these highly affected regions. As Peter Piat said, how can governments function, public services operate, agriculture and industry thrive, law enforcement and militaries maintain security when they're being stripped of able-bodied and skilled men and women? So there's a concern about the role HIV/AIDS plays in causing state instability and state failure. Now, while there's no evidence to date that HIV has caused state failure, I think it is clear that HIV undermines pretty much every aspect of governance you need to keep states stable. Finally, the argument has been made that HIV, if there was a second wave of HIV in strategically important states like China, India, and Russia, that the security implications of that would be enormous. Now, I don't see a whole lot of evidence that the concurrent sexual partnerships that have played such a big role in exacerbating a disease in sub-Saharan Africa are present in those countries, and therefore you will have this second wave epidemic. But the politics of this were very important. The National the U.S. National Intelligence Council, which is the amalgam of all the U.S. intelligence agencies, released a report in 2002, talking about this next wave of HIV in these strategically important states. It, along with the earlier U.S. intelligence product on the risk of infectious diseases, lent the security community, national security community's political support to doing something about AIDS. This was a major development. In addition to the Christian conservatives, the national security community played a really big role in getting PEPFAR funded and in getting the Bush administration to address this issue. So again, while possibly low epidemiological importance, very high political importance. So I hope that makes it clear it's not the humanitarian consequences of infectious disease that the national security cares about as a profession. I don't want to slight them as individuals. although some of you might, I'm sure. But it is the strategic impacts of disease that they care about. Now, why is this important? Well, as I mentioned, in Thailand and Uganda, the link with the strategic impact of disease was quite important. The link with HIV affecting militaries in Thailand and Uganda really drove HIV up the political agenda in those two states. And against expectations, a number of authors have worried about what happens when you link HIV and national security. Won't you put the military in charge of response to public health programs? Won't you put intelligence communities in charge? Won't we have people knocking on doors in the dead of night? Well, in the past, at least, in those two states, the response was public health-driven programs. HIV was driven up the political agenda, received enormous political and economic resources because of the link with national security, and then was dealt with as a public health issue. A similar thing happened in the United States with these publications by the National Security Council on HIV. PEPFAR was, contributed to the founding of PEPFAR. Now, PEPFAR is very politicized, but PEPFAR is not focused on countries that are only allies in the U.S. war on terror. So, again, in the case of Uganda, Thailand, and India, the links between HIV and national security were actually quite beneficial. That's not to say they're not dangers of this linkage. As I mentioned before, the classification of data, as Court said before as well, data in this field is extremely scarce. There was one statistic that UNAIDS published in 1998 that militaries had 2 to 5 times the rate of HIV than civilian populations did, and that statistic lasted almost 8 years because there's no other data to use. The U.S. Intelligence Council cited it. Just about every academic publication on the subject cited it. There's very little data because the national security community classifies rates of HIV among militaries, and the UN has no ability to test peacekeeping forces and find out whether or not contributed troops are positive. So data is a huge problem in this field and contributes to politicization and the prevalence of bad studies as well. Data also, the clear difference between public health should be obvious. I mean, us in public health try quite hard to publish our data, to get other people to listen to what it is. Data is generally open source, whereas the national security community classifies that data. That data is closed and is powerful. So that's a major barrier to cooperation between these two communities. Another danger is while in Uganda, Thailand, and the United States, you did have strong benefits to linking HIV to national security because HIV was addressed as a public health issue after it received increased political attention and economic resources. That's not to say that will happen the same way in the future. If Russia, India, China, other states view HIV as a national security threat, that's not to say they'll respond with public health programs. So that's a worry. And finally, I'm on the final slide. And finally, I think the differences in, which I hope I've made clear in this talk, the differences in objectives and cultures and perspectives between national security and global health are enormous. Global health is a very humanitarian endeavor that attempts to improve the health of people worldwide, whereas national security seeks to promote and defend the interests of one state. Where those interests come together are some very powerful synergies that can and actually have benefited global health. But there is a lot to worry about as well, which is why I think global health has a lot to. It's very important to focus on this sort of other side of the coin, not only how conflict affects health, but also the role health plays in conflict and national security. So I hope I've made it clear that the interaction between conflict and health should be viewed as at least a bi-directional relationship that also has major political ramifications. Thank you. Questions.
Yeah, questions from Harley.
Please. Nigeria is one that's, I didn't list there, but none of those, yeah.
So the extent in which this is really not taken seriously,
yeah, it's a great point. First, the links were contributed politically, but like I said, there was a public health approach to PEPFAR and a humanitarian approach to PEPFAR, which I think was largely driven by the Christian conservative support for the program. So that's a piece of it. There's also no question that HIV is not a top-tier security issue. It's certainly not like terrorism. It's certainly not like bioterrorism. At the same time, the fact that HIV is addressed at all by the national security community, by their CIA studies on it, that presidents and prime ministers now discuss it, is a huge change from where we were 10, 15 years ago. So, yes, it is not a top-tier issue in terms of national security, but it is. It has some importance, which is a big change for global health. And as one of the questioners earlier mentioned, it's growing. I believe it was DoD Directive 3000 you were talking about, which I don't know if you know, but it essentially puts stability operations, peace and stability operations, on par with warfighting as a mission of the Department of Defense. Now that is a huge, radical change in the mission of DOD that will incorporate global health. They're also standing up AFRICOM, which is a new combatant command that covers the continent of Africa. Now there are a number of reasons for that. Some are internal to DOD in terms of just Africa, the continent, was divided between three combatant commands, which made no sense. There's also oil interests. There's also worry about humanitarian intervention. But there's an enormous amount of work that was going on at European Command that's now migrating to AFRICOM about working with militaries in Africa on HIV. There's a great U.S. military-to-military training program that trains foreign militaries on HIV. So, yes, while it's not absolutely the top tier, it certainly doesn't occupy all of the national security community all the time. That those links exist is a major development in the politics of global health.